If your restaurant wants to put the best on the table, look for food with the New York State Certified Seal. It's food that is grown right here. Learn more at certified.ny.gov.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So this is Pauly Shore. I'm here in, is it Bushwick?
It's Bushwick.
Bushwick, and we're here at Roberto's.
Roberta's,
and we're on Heritage Radio. We're talking about food. We're talking about, big glasses, and we're talking about all the man buns. And you're listening to The Morning After.
Episode 192 of The Morning After. I'm your host, Sari Kamen. I'm in studio today in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with my guest, Clancy Miller. Clancy,
hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Clancy is the author of Cooking Solo, which is a fantastic cookbook about the joy of cooking for oneself.
Toots.
I'm just so happy to hear Pauly Shore again. I don't know about you, but...
Yes.
It just really makes my day every time. Pauly Shore for president. We're going to talk to Clancy about her book, about cooking solo and some other things. But first, we're gonna go over the food news of the past week. A lot of exciting stories to cover, including, are you a Bachelor fan, Clancy?
I haven't watched The Bachelor in ages.
I'm sorry. I want to take this opportunity to officially come out of the closet about my affection for The Bachelor. Wow, that's like a lot of sound effects today. That is the only reality show that I watch. It's the only one that I can tolerate. I just find it really fascinating. So I was very happy to read that The Bachelor has come out with its own brand of wine. Like, finally, like that's what we've been waiting for.
That is the best.
They have three wines. They have a Cabernet, a Rosé.
Okay.
Because it's like, you know, they give you a rose on that show.
Yes.
Yeah.
It took a while, but I get it.
You get it. And a Chardonnay, because that's what basic bitches drink, right?
Totes. That's what you need to be drinking while watching The Bachelor.
Yeah, I have no problem with The Bachelor coming out with wine.
I think it's perfect.
I think so, too.
I think every reality show should come out with wine or tequila. Just drink this while you sit on your sofa.
It might not be the nicest bottle of wine of all time, but I think it's probably the most appropriate bottle of wine that one could drink while watching The Bachelor. And I would like the Bachelor organization to send me some.
I would start watching it.
This
again.
Is an appeal to them. I'm happy to like slut shame your wine for you.
I think maybe I was doing it all wrong before by not watching it with wine.
Well, you have to watch it with wine, but
yeah.
Now there's an opportunity to watch it with Bachelor wine,
branded
which
wine.
Makes it all. It's just, it's like full circle.
I'm in it.
Okay, cool. Let's make a date for that.
It's
coming up. Speaking of other things that signify the end of the world, KFC has come out with a candle.
It gets worse.
The scent is fried chicken. No surprise. Spoiler
alert.
It sounds
like a bathroom.
A delicious bathroom.
A delicious bathroom, but that could go so wrong.
So wrong. I know. I mean, it's one thing, you know, if you're hungry and you're like, oh, I'm in the mood for some chicken and like it smells good because you want to eat it. But like, I don't understand why you would ever want to scent your home with that if you weren't just like sitting down and eating it.
It's
confusing. It would make me want to eat the candle or vomit, like one or the other.
Or both.
Same result. Exactly. It just seems really strange. And I guess you can't really buy it. It was like part of a giveaway. Like
to whom?
That's
who
I don't
got
know.
These candles.
I don't know. Like people that deserve punishment, I guess. Bad people. And the last news story to share this week, Coke has a new marketing, I don't know, something where they're trying to promote the idea that you can pair Coke with foods that aren't just fast food, like upscale foods like sushi and lobster. And so they're trying to like populate ads in Instagram.
Oh my God.
different like people who are on Instagram who consider themselves to be influencers, and like you're one of those people. Like, can you ever imagine being like, oh, I'm cooking and like making this like really nice dinner like paired with Coke?
I've made you foie gras with Coke.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
It is really strange.
You could do interesting things maybe with dessert, but mostly I think that is hilarious and kind of sad. But I mostly kind of love it because it's just like, just buy it.
Just. It's just so shameless. Lobster. I don't know if that's like an actually good idea to pair.
I mean, it's terrible. Yeah, it's but a it's terrible so terrible idea. It's good.
It's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
I mean, Coke is actually, like, such an overpowering flavor.
It is. It's just, like...
like, it makes no sense at all.
Here's some syrup for your seafood.
Ew. Yeah. That sounds so bad. It is. It's so bad. It's just shameless that we have to respect it. all right, cool. That's our food news. Actually, I also did want to mention, it's not funny, but did you hear that Roberta's got... some threatening calls this week?
No, what happened? Break it down.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention it, but I feel like I should. I mean, because we're here and, you know, we're in Roberta's right now. There are actual people who believe that the so-called, like, hashtag Pizzagate scandal mm-hmm. has extended to Roberta's.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. I was really, really sad to read that. You know, there's people who believe, like, you know, because they digest fake news and don't bother doing any sort of, like, diligence whatsoever in distinguishing what's real and what's just blatantly made up, that there's some, like, pedophile scandal that was Whoa. Connected to the Clintons taking place in a pizza restaurant in D.C., and it went so far that someone showed up to that pizza restaurant in D.C. with a gun last Whoa. Week because he wanted to investigate. And somehow news got out that Roberta's was connected to that scandal, and employees at Roberta's received really threatening calls this last week.
That is horrible.
It's horrifying. Yeah.
It's also just like the world of made up news.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes to show you that there's real consequences to actions. And like, if you're one of those people that's perpetuating and disseminating or just not actively opposing
right.
fake news at this point, like people can die, you know, like people can actually become, there's violence that's associated with it. So it's not just like you're just aimlessly, you know, putting thought out into the world without repercussions. And
yeah,
I just thought it was important to mention because, you know, I doubt that any of our listeners are subscribing to that. But it just feels a little too close to home, not to mention at this point. So
absolutely. I didn't know it. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. So I just wanted to, you know, thank Roberta's for being a place that has always shown integrity and just, you know, continuing to do so, and just sort of like mention that we're all in this together at this point, and
for real.
Get your shit together, people. Yeah. Fake news has got to stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. On that note, we're going to take a break and we'll be back with Clancy Miller.
New York chefs and restaurants are proud of the food they put on the table. And serving produce that comes from local, environmentally responsible farms is a way to leave an even better taste in everyone's mouth. So when shopping for your ingredients, look for the New York State Grown and Certified Seal. It lets you know which food is grown right here in New York State, certifying the food that comes from local farms that meet a higher standard. You'll not only be serving local food, you'll be supporting local farmers. Learn more about the New York State Grown and Certified program at certified.ny.gov.
Hey, we're back. We're eating pizza. This is the morning after on Heritage Radio. We are at Roberta's in Bushwick, and my guest, Clancy Miller, is here. She is the author of Cooking Solo, which is just a really fantastic cookbook about finding joy in cooking meals for yourself. Clancy, it's so great to have you here, and I think I mentioned to you before that, you know, I'm a solo person, and I've cook solo for myself a lot. And I loved reading your book because it was as much a cookbook as it was just kind of like an affirmation and a love letter to finding that joy. And I was just I guess right off the bat, I was kind of wondering, like, was cooking solo something that has always been joyous for you, or was it sort of like a process for you to get there?
I think it's probably a process, but something interesting happened this past week. I was cleaning up stuff at my parents' house and came across a journal from well over a decade ago. And I made this list of all the things I usually look for in relationships. And I said, I would like to start doing these things for myself. Ooh. And in terms of being generous and just having a good time. And so it was funny to see the seeds kind of for mm-hmm. cooking solo way back then.
How old were you when you wrote that journal?
I don't remember the exact year, but I know it was like, I guess I was like mid-20s, mm-hmm. something like that. And it was just interesting to see, oh, I was already trying to figure out, you know, the seeking fun in others, but also enjoying yourself. But I really got started with it when I was in culinary school. I went to Paris, went to Le Cordon Bleu, and it was my first time living totally on my own, and I had to cook for myself. So that's technically when it started.
I like that you mentioned, you know, when that started, that it was like the first time living on your own, because so much of going through your cookbook reminded me of what it felt like to live on my own for the first time and feeling that excitement of like, not even just with cooking, but like, I'm an adult. Like, I can do whatever I want.
Right.
And so much of this book is like, you can make whatever you want for yourself.
Yeah.
Like, when you're by yourself, you can eat waffles for dinner, like, yeah. or pancakes with ganache, or like, whatever it is. Like, there's so much freedom and joy in being like, what do I want to eat right now? And I love how you explored that.
Yeah. I think my whole thing is to turn it from being a chore into something that is an opportunity for indulgence or fun or exploring the freedom, as you just put it so well, of just, it's just you. And that actually means you don't have to please anyone but yourself. And for the record, I do think it's best to embark in cooking for yourself when you actually have the energy to do so. I'm not someone who thinks you should cook by yourself for yourself all the time. But if you're feeling a little energetic and you've got some ingredients, or you feel like going to shop for those ingredients, it is fun to kind of just have breakfast for dinner or whatever you feel like having.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the actual thing? Like, what was the actual process, you know, starting with those seeds that you mentioned that led to the revelation that you were like, oh, I'm actually going to do a cookbook about cooking solo.
I've worked with other chefs on their projects kind of as a ghostwriter, and one project fell through, and I just thought, well, I want to do my own thing. I'd like to write in my own voice. And so I wrote my agent a list of ideas that I had, and cooking solo was on the list. And she said, that's the one. And it worked out well, because a lot of those things in the cookbook are things that I have, that have been a part of my repertoire for a really long time. And then it was kind of fun to brainstorm and expand from my repertoire and think about, okay, so there's a chapter, you know, there's a breakfast chapter, there's a lunch chapter, and then the dinner chapters are, you know, meat, but there's a meat chapter, a vegetarian chapter, so on and so forth. So it was fun for me to think about my vegetarian friends who are single, or, you know, friends who actually have the luxury of having breakfast and all these different things. So that was kind of a fun brainstorming period. And I would just invite friends over and kind of give them this random tasting menu and ask them for notes, kind of turn it into a focus group. So that was fun. Like, my entertaining actually began as a means to test out recipe ideas.
Your friends are lucky. Yeah, I mean, it's funny that, like, this is the idea that jumped out to your agent, because cooking solo is something that, you know, so many people do, because so many people do live by themselves or are by themselves when they eat meals. But very few people have kind of pursued it as a concept. And it's, I mean, for me, it was so comforting to come across your book and be like, yes, thank you. Like, it's something that should be thought of as like an opportunity, like as you say so many times, like a joyful opportunity, and not something that, you know, needs to be done in secret, or, you know, there needs to be no stigma attached to it. And I know that you lived in Europe for a while when you went to Le Cordon Bleu, and I would love to hear how differently Europeans kind of like approach shopping and just cooking, because so many people abroad also live by themselves, and I think it's just like they're more conditioned to cook just for like a meal, as opposed to, you know, cooking for the week or having tons of leftovers. How did that sort of inform your ultimate process in cooking solo?
Well, I had a super tiny refrigerator when I first moved to Paris. I was in a tiny studio, and so just having a super tiny refrigerator informed what I could and could not buy. And I also lived near farmers markets, which was really cool. And so one of the things I just enjoyed doing, kind of, even though I was living there, part of me felt like a tourist. So I would just enjoy walking around the farmers markets. And so I would just look at stuff and think, okay, I'm going to get that for lunch, or going to get that for dinner. And that's kind of how I started shopping for myself and approaching meals as a daily ritual. And then what I found in terms of my friends in Paris is that people entertain in the home a lot more. Of course, people go out to eat in restaurants, but in a city like New York, going out to eat is almost like a sport. People are always up on the latest, and, you know, everyone has their list of favorites and whatnot. In Paris, at least when I was there, it felt a little less like a sport, and it was very normal to invite people into your home. So for me, cooking also for myself became a way to kind of practice things that I might make for friends if I was going to a potluck or if I was inviting people into my place. But yeah, I definitely picked up on my own and observing others the shop daily thing, even if it's not at a farmer's market.
Yeah, your book reads, you know, like I mentioned, it's so much an affirmation as much of it as a cookbook. And I would love to hear you kind of speak to how cooking really is sort of an expression of self-love.
So I think one of the fundamentals of self-love,
or self-care, I think, as
of
you
self-care,
put it too.
Yeah. Is spending time with yourself. You know, I think and it's probably not just in this country. We live in a world that values partnership, which I think is beautiful. But I think it's good to take care of yourself. So just having some solo time, having some solitude, and learning how to enjoy that time. So that's the first ingredient. And also just finding it, being relaxed with yourself and kind of being relaxed in your own skin. So for me, music has always been a big part of my cooking. I've always gotten a big kick out of just listening to music I love, or learning new music, or like I love hip hop dance classes. So like kind of practicing choreography as I, like in between, preparing dishes and stuff like that. And
not just, with a knife necessarily.
Not with a knife. It's probably
that
happened.
That sounds dangerous.
Though. Yeah. Put the knife down and then dance.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of my personal playtime. And sometimes I think of it as a meditative process, you know, slicing onions or carrots or whatever, doing the whole mise en place. But sometimes I just think of it as a way to work through problems, like just like you might go on a long walk, or you might just like, I don't know, veg out. Doing something else, such as cooking, sometimes allows me to just think through the day, or, you know, kind of release whatever issue has been working in my mind. And then also making something really delicious is just something everyone can enjoy, including oneself. So why wouldn't I want to make a really good meal for myself? And just kind of have that moment like, oh, I made this. It's for me. I'm worth it. Yeah. I don't know if that answers.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I was reading your book, I felt sort of like guilty, because I actually really enjoy cooking, but I know that for myself, sometimes I'm like, eh, why bother? Like, it's just me. And then, right. Like, I'm someone who actually really loves to cook, and I still have those thoughts. And yeah. I don't know why. Like, why do we have this feeling like, oh, I don't deserve it, like, if it's only me? And you talked a lot about, like, you know, the very sort of, like, American tendency when you're working during the day to like not enjoy lunch, like to not take that time. Like, why is that? Why does that have to be treated like such a luxury? Like, why is that something that's not ingrained into our culture? Like, I know it is in other places.
Well, I think I don't have the definitive answer, mm-hmm. but I think so. One of the things I love about France and that I loved about, you know, living there for a period of time was that there is this value on the kind of the quality of living and the l'art de vivre, as the French call it, the art of living, and which is kind of taking the time to enjoy a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, your breakfast. Not that there's some kind of major breakfast going on in France, but just taking the time to enjoy a moment, including a moment with oneself. So I think here we are, you know, for some reason, a Donald Trump chant just came into my head.
Oh,
like, USA. Like, I think this is a great country, but we're very work focused.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, almost no matter where you are, it's not just New York. We're super productivity focused. And I think a little bit of our productivity gets in the way of enjoying the special moments of life, including just quiet moments with oneself or loud moments with oneself. I blast my music. It's not some kind of like prim proper, you know,
yeah.
But yeah, I think we're on to the next very easily. And I think it's all good to like hang out with your friends and have a party. And like, I enjoy that too, but I don't think we are a culture that values as much taking time for self or like appreciating, you know, smaller moments and stuff.
And I just think that even if we do, we don't really talk about it that much.
Yeah.
Or write about it that
yeah.
much.
It's not as openly valued, I don't
yeah.
think. And I also think people have really weird ideas around solitude. Like, I remember talking, you know, when I first was writing the book or when it was first coming out, I would tell people about it and some people would totally get it and just, like, smile and be happy. Like, oh, that's for me. And then some people would say, oh, that's so sad.
Why is it sad?
I think people...
I mean, I know why people think it's sad. I mean, that was
yeah,
a rhetorical question.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, I mean, I'm so appreciative that you were trying to just remove the stigma of cooking for yourself being sad and instead, gosh, just like reveling in the fact that you can make this delicious food for yourself. And of course,
yeah.
you don't have to apologize. What kind of foods do you like to make when you really have that energy and you're feeling kind of... like you want to give yourself a lot of self-love.
Yeah. So since it's really cold out, in this kind of weather, I love making different kinds of risottos.
Mm.
Big time. I like making different kinds of stews, a beef stew. I like if I really feel like going all out, doing different kinds of fruit tarts. Right. I think we can still get, you can find a quince here and there. I like doing stuff. I like to make like a quince compote and like mix it with different things.
I need to get in your focus group.
Yeah, nice, nice. You are invited.
Yes.
What else do I like to do? Stews, risottos. I sometimes just like a big old steak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds comforting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, and since, you know, you mentioned the election, like, fuck it, let's just go there.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been talking about how cooking has been really healing.
Yeah.
Have you found that lately? Like, right now, when people just feel really despondent, I've heard, like, all I can do is cook.
Right. That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is something comforting in cooking, whether you're cooking for yourself or cooking for a group. It is comforting and it's kind of back to the basics. And I think we're at a time where we're going to have to get back to basics in mm-hmm. terms of kind of like, what am I doing with my life? But, you know, in terms of how to put yourself back together, let's face it, for those of us who were really depressed by this outcome or shocked or
horrified.
It is kind of a question of putting yourself back together and taking care of yourself, because I think for those of us who want to be active in supporting people or organizations who are particularly threatened or who are likely to be threatened, that's going to be potentially an uphill battle. And I do think there should be a balance between taking care of oneself so that you can be on the front line or support in whatever way you can actively. And I'm still trying to figure out the ways in which I can be of support. I can act. I can.
What, yeah. What else besides just cooking? I mean, what has been useful to you?
What has been useful? Things like I've been really delighted to rally around, like, or protesting against the pipeline in North Dakota, or, you know, just supporting organizations like Planned Parenthood, or sometimes it's as simple as just writing a check, or, I mean, that's not the only thing that's going to do it, but just spreading the word, or maybe you sending some money, or having conversations with people. I think even though that's not necessarily doing anything, there's a certain kind of brainstorming aspect about that, making phone calls to senators saying I'm against this. Those are some simple things that I have been able to feel like, okay, this may be really small, but it is something, and I can do this while I figure out what else to do.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel like as a food professional, how have you been able to sort of like access or tap into your skill set? Or maybe you haven't figured it out yet. I mean, I think we're all trying to kind of figure out like, okay, this is what I've done. This is what I've been doing professionally. Like, how do I now sort of channel that into a way that feels really proactive? Like, how can I kind of call upon the resources that I already have?
Right. So here's an idea that I have yet to put into action. Our mutual friend Davis and I have talked about starting a supper club, kind of. I used to have a supper club back in the day with a really good friend of mine, and it wasn't politically based. It was just for fun and music. But Davis and I have talked about doing a supper club as a brainstorm, a means of brainstorming about social action and what we can do. One of my ideas, at least when there were like marches almost on a daily basis, was, oh, we should have something over a meal where people can just make signs. But yeah, so we're hoping to start something in the new year, and I would really just like for it to be a brainstorming dinner, just people from different backgrounds and skill sets and passions to talk about, okay, what can we do?
Because yeah, I really love that you're kind of using food as the conduit there, because like on a basic level, as you mentioned, like sitting down and baking bread is such a like a it's a tangible and a really symbolic way to just gather community and organize. And I love that there's like this common thing that we can still kind of find joy in the midst of like what is a very bleak situation.
Absolutely. And I think I have a friend who uses this quote, two friends actually. I think it's an Audre Lorde quote, is that you have to make revolution irresistible. And I'm not necessarily talking about being the planter of the, like, I don't know. We're just going to have a supper club. We'll see what comes from it in terms of brainstorming. But I do think there should be joy in organizing. You know, we should, if we're passionate about these issues, we should also bring joy in standing up for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have felt like since the election, like the most kind of charged moments I've had have been moments that have felt very kind of like artistically fulfilling.
Sure.
Since that, I mean, I went to an Ani DiFranco concert a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
And like, obviously she's like a very, you know, political singer.
Yeah.
But I just felt very sort of like electrified and motivated in that moment, because I felt very like filled up kind of like spiritually. And then, you know, having this show, like having someone like you on just to be able to talk about it, or having my guest a couple weeks ago, Christian Duray, to talk about like ethnicity and food. I just feel like as long as we kind of keep ourselves sort of like we just sustain this appetite for dialogue, or just staying engaged is like the most kind of like potent thing that we can do.
Absolutely.
And I love your idea of a supper club, and I'd love to be involved.
Yes, please come. Please come. Yes.
Yeah. Who else is kind of like inspiring you right now? Like have there any been sort of like larger figures that you've resonated
with? Two people actually. Grace Bonney, behind Design Sponge, who wrote this book that is magnificent called In the Company of Women. I'm actually in the book. She's had this wonderful, wonderful tour for her book. And I was lucky enough to be on her panel for the last stop on her tour in Philadelphia. And she just set such a great tone for that evening. And it was a couple of days after the election results. It was literally, or I guess technically it was kind of day after we found out, because it was November 10th. And she's done a wonderful job, I think, on her, especially on her Instagram, in terms of talking about what she's doing. And so even though she has this design background, she'll kind of break frame a little bit and say, you know, today I'm doing this, or today, you know, I have a meetup with these local activists. Or so I really like what she's doing and how she's using her platform. And likewise, her wife, Julia Tershin, who is a food person, I love what she's doing on Instagram in terms of, you know, literally posting her, I think she posted her contribution to Planned Parenthood and just like, this is what I'm doing, or various just kind of moments of breaking frame a little bit, but still using the platform like, listen,
yeah,
Planned Parenthood, food, no, they don't necessarily totally connect.
Yeah, I
but
like
who
that.
Cares?
It's because not even breaking frame. It's just like things have shifted so drastically, like in the larger conversation, that I think, I mean, to what we were saying, like it's just about sort of recalibrating
yeah.
your platform.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not about doing anything differently. It's just about sort of calling upon, you know, the tools that you already have to feel like you're doing something active. And, you know, whatever it is that you have, whether it's making a meal and sharing that with other people, it's just sort of, I think, expounding upon, you know, the little things each day.
Yeah, I think it's, I also think it's something about integrity, mm-hmm. you know, like being your authentic self. So if you are a person who cares about X, Y, or Z, Planned Parenthood, immigration, you name it, just guess what, guys, I have to speak up on this. It's not just going to be about pie. It's
yeah.
not going to be about, you know, what I ate today, although I care about what I ate today. But this is something that's also on my heart and I want to be active on.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing to sort of find that balance. You know, it's like we spoke about this briefly before. It's like, yeah, we you know, we care about food and that's great. And we don't have to not care about food anymore, but we have to try and find, you know, other things that make us feel like we're contributing in a way that's really worthwhile. You know, not that food doesn't matter anymore, but everything matters so much more.
Exactly.
And just incorporating everything.
Yeah, including the questions, you mm-hmm. know, like what you just said. How can I use my skills and my passions in a perhaps slightly different way? What am I trying to, how do I want to be active? Who do I want to help? How do I want to help? And am I learning something that I can share with other people, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, I also want to like get back to the point of self-care, which mm-hmm. is, and preservation is so important. And if it's like making a meal for yourself, like if that's going to be useful and helpful and just making you feel like you're engaging and just finding joy and comfort, like that's so important also. So I'm happy that there's people like you that are, you know, finding ways to bring small affirmations to just like the most mundane tasks, whether it is just like making a quick supper. You know, if finding like a little bit of joy in preparing a meal can be more fulfilling than like sitting down and doing like the same old, you know, relying on Seamless, ordering like a not very great, like unhealthy meal. If you can just find little ways to each day just feel fulfilled, I think that's, you know, it activates something that's even larger that you can't even maybe see that day. But I think it's very necessary and very important.
I completely agree.
Good. We're going to take another quick commercial break and we'll be back with the morning after quiz.
Cool.
Hey, you're listening to The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sari Kamen, your host. I've been chatting with Clancy Miller, the author of Cooking Solo. We've been having a very, really, really cool discussion about cooking for oneself and finding joy, especially in the current political climate. But now we're gonna shift gears a little bit and do the morning after quiz. So Clancy, this is a really, really insignificant quiz. I'm gonna ask you three questions, and okay. Each question has a multiple choice or three multiple choice possibilities. So Clancy, your last name is Miller.
Correct.
Yes, you know all about that. But I don't know what you know about the Miller Brewing Company.
Oh boy.
So we'll find out. Thanks. Thank you so much. Okay, why is Miller High Life nicknamed the Champagne of Beers? Is it because in 1903, champagne was such a luxury because most folks, they drank beer to celebrate New Year's Eve, and Miller launched a marketing campaign advertising itself as a luxury beer that one could drink to replace champagne on New Year's Eve? Is it B, Miller High Life used to have very high levels of CO2 added so that they would festively pop when opened, hence the champagne nickname? Or was it C, most beers were served in cans or buckets, but Miller High Life came out in a bottle, making it more exclusive and champagne-like?
Oh, you know what? At first, I was going to go for A and then B, but I'm actually going to go for C because I just saw a poster saying that there's like a limited edition reissue of like the old glass bottle.
Yeah, C is right.
Go me.
Yeah, it's true. And I think they still use the same bottle, or they're doing a reissue of.
I'm so excited. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very fancy.
I'm
very
so glad I saw that billboard.
I'm so glad you did too. Sort of. Okay, which style of Miller beer is not currently on the market?
Uh-oh.
Is it Miller Chill, Miller Midnight, or Miller Light Ice?
They all sound terrible.
And they're all real.
Let's see.
She didn't answer yet, David.
That was for they all sound terrible.
Oh, okay.
That is a true statement.
Right? Wait. Chill,
Midnight,
and
Light Ice.
Oh, gosh. The last one sounds like antifreeze.
it does.
I hope that's not on the... I don't know. I'm just going to go for Midnight.
Midnight is on the market.
Oh,
Light Ice is not.
Okay, the antifreeze one.
The antifreeze one, yeah, that was a limited edition light beer.
Good. I'm glad it was limited.
Miller Chill is my favorite, though. It's like a Michelada style. It's like lime and ice already in the can. That sounds disgusting. Okay, which is not an actual Miller beer slogan? Mm. A, everything you always wanted in a beer and less. B, probably the best beer in the world. Or C, if you've got the time, we've got the beer.
Oh, damn it. I think... Those are also all terrible, by the way.
And also all real slogans. I did not make
I'm
going to
go
up.
For... Oh, wait, what was the last one again?
If you've got the time, we've got the beer.
I think it's either B or C. I know I have to pick one.
Yeah, be a little more specific.
Okay, I'm going to go with B.
Yes, you're right. Probably the best beer in the world is a real beer slogan, but it's Carlsberg.
I'm going to start coming up with beer slogans.
I know, they're so bad. Like, you literally just have to be the laziest person in the world
right.
And just, like, poop it out.
Exactly.
And then you're like, great.
Yeah.
I just
give me the money.
Give me the money. Yeah, these are all horrible. I really liked everything you wanted in a beer and less. That's really funny. That's a real Miller beer slogan. Well, you did really well. 2 out of 3. That ain't bad.
That ain't bad. Yeah. Considering I know nothing about Miller beer.
Yeah, turns out you sure do. You know a lot. Well, Clancy, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been really great.
Come back anytime.
Totes. And come to the supper club.
Yes, I would love to.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. Go out and buy Clancy's book, whether you're solo or not. It's chock full of delicious recipes that are actually really easy to make.
Totes. And there's a chapter for people with like families and when you're entertaining, basically. When
you weirdos that cook with other people.
You people.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but yeah, there's a little something for everyone, I guess. Cooking solo. Whoever fine books are sold.
Correct.
Preferably in bookstores.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening to The Morning After. I have appreciated you all. Have very happy holidays.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.